Welcome, welcome, curious souls, to the Macabre Emporium, your sanctuary for the unusual, the mysterious, and the appalling.
Step through our cryptic doorway into a world where secrets whisper and enigmas come to life.
I'm David.
And I'm Sarah.
Together, we're your custodians of the macabre, guiding you through tales that defy the ordinary.
Discover the untold stories, from lesser-known cases of true crime to the bizarre events that captivate us.
Join us on a journey to the shadows where the mainstream fades and the extraordinary beckons.
So whether you seek the bizarre, the eerie, or the chillingly obscure,
you're in for a treat here at Macabre Emporium.
Welcome back to Macabre Emporium. This is episode 78.
Wow, look at you getting it on cue without me having to point to you. But also, welcome.
Welcome.
But if our black hats on Twitch, are you guys wondering where the hell I went last week? I had an impromptu decision to take a break. I felt like I needed to take one because for after Monday stream, I was tired. Tuesday, I didn't feel any better. Wednesday, I didn't feel any better. I was like, okay, I'm not doing getting on Twitch all this week, which really sucks because one game that a lot of people had sent me called Zookosis came out that Monday. And then I was like, hey, I'm not going to be on the rest of the week. And I just
started it and then just said, peace out.
Yeah, and I don't think about it. I probably should use the Twitch stories to do that and also finish the other thing that I've been working on with one of our Twitch friends one of these days.
Yeah.
So, for that kind of thing, it's also going to be for the podcast, obviously. But anyhow, welcome, like as I said. So, well, we're finally in Spooktober or Shocktober, October, spooky season, whatever, you know, whatever you want to call it.
All what? I see is a little cream-colored paw doing this under the door.
Like, from when we first started doing this, we always said the cats are going to be included. Unfortunately, Ginger is... We're pretty confident to say that she has absolutely little to no hearing left at this point. So yes. She will start screaming for absolutely no fucking reason.
And so, she screams so loud, and I think it's because she can't hear herself.
It could be, and there's times that I stay up late to work on episode stuff after Sarah's gone to bed on the weekends. Mm-hmm. And she screams so loud, I'm afraid she's going to wake Sarah up.
I don't hear shit.
But it could just be louder because, the TV's down. I don't hear the TV or whatever, or it's off or whatnot. So there's no noise going on, and I'm not going to be talking to myself out loud. So it might just seem louder than it really is at that point. But
could be.
I know you keep telling me you don't hear shit, but it's so damn loud that I'm afraid she's going to wake you up through the you hearing her through the the door at home. Mm-mm. But anyhow, it's a Sarah episode this week. So what do you have for us?
For some reason, this being the month of October, have not even thought of, hey, I should probably do some Halloween or spooky type things.
Right.
I just have normal ass true crime again.
Right. So not part three of your underwater basket weaving tutorial?
No.
Okay.
No.
She'll save that for her next episode. But I did plan on doing one that one of our good friends over at the dog show stole from me last year by releasing it a week early. I'm going to be doing it this year. And I don't care. I'm doing it anyway. Yeah. If some other podcast friends of ours does it, I don't care. I'm releasing it. I'm doing it anyway. It'll be who did it better? It'll be the who wore it better of Halloween podcasts.
Who won, the cats or the dogs?
Well, they already did it, but who knows? We'll see what they said. They've already said there's episodes that I've covered that they did we've done a hell of a lot better than they did. Mm. And I don't think so, but they said I did. But anyhow. So we got Sarah's True Crime. We got some ramblings out of the way there. So I guess it's time for me to start this episode off with Around This Day for October 9th.
Yep.
British rock singer and songwriter was born in Liverpool, England in 1940 would be John Lennon. Because I totally forgot to put his name in here.
I was going to say, wait, who are you talking about?
I started reading through that. I was like, oh shit, I forgot his name. Good thing I remember because I brought him up in last week's too because of the photograph of, taking my in Leibowitz. In 1969, the Supremes released their single Someday We'll Be Together, and this will be Diana Ross's last recording with the group. In 1986, The Late Show with Joan Rivers premiered on Fox. She was the first woman to host a U.S. late-night television talk show, and she was fired in May of 1987, and I totally should have looked up what the reason why it was.
Oh, I can guarantee it was her mouth.
Could be, or low ratings, because you think about times like, a woman talk show host?
She did really good with her show.
Well, this is
that was late, a popular show.
Late night, not daytime.
Right.
Okay.
This, yeah,
she, for some reason, I thought she had a daytime talk show too at some
she
point.
She did really well with her show, so I can almost guarantee it was her mouth that overloaded her ass.
And the way she talks is probably just considered by normal day standards today.
Yeah.
In 1915, the 20th president, Woodrow Wilson, became the first U.S. president to attend a World Series game. Teams that played in the 1915 World Series were the Boston Red Sox and Philadelphia Phillies. Also in that same year, Detroit Tigers, Ty Cobb seals his 96th base of the season in a 5-0 loss to the Cleveland Indians. In 1941, U.S. President Franklin D. Roosevelt approved an atomic program that would become the Manhattan Project. And Che Guevara was executed in Bolivia in 1967 when he was shot in the head, and he was a major figure in the Cuban Revolution during the 1950s. Also, fun fact about that, they had to cut off his hands to identify as make sure that it was him, and they also kept his body, his burial secret for a while.
Why'd they have to cut his hands off?
I don't know. That was just, I didn't look more into it. I just thought, well, that was weird. Couldn't be like, yep, that's the fucking guy.
Or, you know, I don't know, fingerprints.
Yeah,
it had can some, still be attached to the body.
It was something that had to do with cutting his hands off for the fingerprint identification. I don't remember when I compiled the list up for this episode.
What the fuck?
And what the fuck was that too?
I'm leaving that in.
That's fine. It's all right. There, we got around this day out of the way. You ready to get started then?
Yay!
All right, let's get going then.
Yes, okay. In 1995, Adrienne Jessica Jones was 16 years old. She lived at home in Mansfield, Texas, which back then was like a pretty small town. It was like a population of 8,000.
Yeah.
That's not a lot.
No.
She lived with her parents, Bill and Linda, and her two younger brothers. Her parents were extremely protective of her because at this time, Mansfield was in a weird transition between like basically going from like cookie cutter houses and Pleasantville to crime starting to trickle in.
Yeah. Oh, so we're finally getting out of Pleasantville, USA for, you know,
yes,
2 weeks in a row for me.
Yes. They gave her a 9 p.m. curfew. I mean, they just wanted to keep her safe. But right. This was on weekends. 9 p.m. for the weekend.
Right.
That's a little early for me.
What? And you said she was what, 16?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, that's that terrible because that's what ours was at that age.
On a weekend?
Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Her parents were extremely involved in making sure they knew where Adrienne was all the time. Not like the GPS kind, like, you know, follow her location or whatever.
Not helicopter parenting?
Kind of. Like, if she said she was going to go to a fair, they wanted, right, you know, receipt from food she bought, a receipt from the tickets that she purchased to ride rides.
So some proof of purchase of being actually there.
If she went to a movie, they wanted the movie stub.
No give her trust
a,
in
give her kid. A little fucking leniency. They trusted her. They just were super afraid because, again, they're transitioning out of Pleasantville and the crime and the riffraff is starting to come in.
Right.
They just want to make sure she's safe. Some people would have said that her dad was a little bit overprotective. He nailed all of her bedroom window closed, mm-hmm, in four different spots so that she couldn't sneak out. And she had only snuck out like once or twice before. Apparently back when that happened, mm-hmm, it wasn't an issue, but now it's an issue. She attended Mansfield High School, where she was a junior. Her schoolmates and her teachers absolutely loved her. At the age of 16, she had many good qualities that made her townspeople's role model. The younger ones, obviously. She did well in school. She took a lot of accelerated classes, so she was extremely smart. She was a really good athlete. She loved sports. She played on the girls' soccer team. Unfortunately, an injury forced her to sit out, so she wound up joining cross country. I did say crunchy, didn't I?
It's what it sounded like.
Cross crunchy? Fuck yeah. It. She joined the cross country team to keep active, and she excelled there too and basically became player numero uno. She was beautiful inside and out, according to her friends and to her family. After graduation, she aspired to be a veterinarian, which is what I swore as a child I was going to grow up and be.
Yeah, one of my nieces did the same thing, too.
But the more I grew up and realized what a veterinarian, like, all of that entails, I couldn't do that. Like, having to put animals down, I wouldn't do that. No thanks. Outside of school, Jessica was a hard worker. While juggling school and her sports, she also worked 20 hours a week. She was extremely pretty, so she did get a lot of attention from boys, and she kind of thrived on that. I mean, what 16-year-old girl wouldn't?
Right. Oh, my God.
I'm sure you did. You showed
me attention. No, I didn't.
It was a joke.
I know.
That's why I said no, I didn't. About you being a 16-year-old girl.
That's why I said no, I didn't. Nice try.
Damn it.
Well, you're trying to catch me off guard here.
But yeah, like I said, she thrived on that. She made sure that if she went to work, she was looking pristine. If she went to school, full face of makeup, her hair was always done nice, her makeup done nice, clothing was nice. She had some style, I suppose. Friends said that she was very flirty with the local boys. However, on paper, she was a perfect child. Did well, never got in trouble except for the once or twice that she, you know, snuck out. But who the fuck doesn't do that? Even though she excelled in school, she was a fantastic player of any sport she joined, and she was in the workforce. It didn't stop her from being, like, you know, your typical teenager.
Right.
She rebelled against her parents and often tested them. December 3rd, 1995, Adrienne got permission from her parents to stay up later than normal so she could talk to her boyfriend, Tracy Smith, on the phone. Tracy was away on vacation with his parents. During the call with Adrienne, Adrienne's mom, Linda, heard her tell her boyfriend to hold on because another call was coming through. This is when house phones and call waiting were still a thing. Linda asked who it was, and Adrienne said it was David from the cross-country team. She said that he had sounded really upset. Adrienne's family went to bed and slept soundly. They woke up the next day. Everyone was up and getting ready for their days. Everyone except Adrienne, that is. Linda got a bit annoyed because Adrienne was sleeping through her alarm and it just kept blaring. Kind of how I get annoyed when you just lay there and you've got your phone alarm and the dresser alarm going off like crazy. Right. Linda went to check on her and her bed was still made, but she wasn't in it. Linda tried to stay calm, telling herself that Adrienne had gone out for a run, which I'm assuming she did in the morning sometimes. This was immediately shut down because she found her running shoes on the floor next to her bed. So she was not out running.
Because she went running out in high heels instead.
Then in her brain, she jumped to Adrienne had found a new way to sneak out of the house again. But then shut that down too, because while Adrienne had snuck out before, she had never stayed out all night. She became weary and talked to her husband, Bill, and together they called the police and let them know that they thought their daughter was missing. When they called, they had no idea about the information police had gotten a little earlier in the same day that morning. Around 7 a.m., a farm owner in Grand Prairie, Texas, walked up on something that stopped him in his tracks. So Grand Prairie is about 10 miles away from Mansfield and where Adrienne Jones and her family lived. So this man had gone out to grab his mail, and while he was walking to his mailbox, he realized that a piece of the gate around his yard had been knocked down. He got curious and walked over to that area on the farm, and he saw a lump on the ground that he mistook for roadkill. So he walked closer, and he saw that it actually wasn't roadkill. Instead, it was the body of a young girl. So he ran back to his house, called the police. When the cops arrived there, they took a look at the girl laying there in her pajamas. They immediately noticed that she had been shot twice, once in the cheek, once in the forehead. They noted the girl had fairly extensive injuries to her head other than the bullet wounds. They also noted that the girl had bruises and scrapes and scratches all over her arms, legs, and hands. They were able to match those up with the barbed wire gate that she ran through when she was trying to reach that farmer's house. They could also tell whoever this girl was put up a hell of a fight. They also realized that this wasn't just a random killing. Due to the execution style in which this girl was killed, the cops were thinking that it could have something to do with drugs or a local gang. But this girl was like, it'd be like my niece.
Okay.
her being involved in drugs and crime.
Yeah, okay.
Right. That's like, that's how this girl looked. So very not a thing. Cops sent out a bulletin to all police stations in every neighboring county. They included a basic description of the young Jane Doe, which included her approximate weight, height, and age. And this was sent out in case anybody had filed a missing persons report.
Right. Before we go on, maybe we try to seem a little bit insensitive there for a moment. If you actually know Sarah's niece, you're going to understand why we're like, yeah, okay, that's complete bullshit.
Yeah. She's very girly girl and she's just awesome. Not that this girl wasn't, I don't know her. But yeah, it would, if you knew my niece, you would understand why I said that to David. Anyways, it didn't take long for the Mansfield police to get in contact with the Grand Prairie police. Through collaboration, the two police departments were able to identify the body. That was found as being that of Adrienne Jessica Jones. They had to pass the information on to Bill and Linda Jones, who were no doubt terrified and outraged and all the things that I assume a parent would be if they got that phone call. When Linda got the news, she was absolutely and rightfully sick. She fucking lost it. With Mansfield being such a small town, news traveled very quickly. Adrienne's school came to a halt once they were notified about what happened. Her friends and acquaintances took solace in each other's arms, crying in the hallways together. With the word spreading as quickly as it did, it turned the small town of Mansfield into a scared town. Everyone worried about who did it and if they were still around. They worried about themselves and their kids walking out the front door. It just created a general sense of unease for everyone in their own homes. With small towns, you also get gossip.
Right. It's kind of like, you know, last week's episode of the Mad Gasser.
Mm-hmm. The Chatty Cathys of Mansfield had all kinds of theories as to what happened, and they just spread that shit like peanut butter.
Some are we talking about a regular amount of peanut butter, or are you and your best friend's amount of peanut butter?
Definitely a Dee and Sarah amount of peanut butter.
That's a whole lot.
Yeah. Chatty Cathys, man. Fucking, I hate gossipers. Anyways, some of them said that Adrienne's death was because of drugs. Others said that there was a serial killer in the town and everybody's in jeopardy. Linda came to the police to give them some information that she had on Adrienne before the night she died. So she told them about her talking to her boyfriend Tracy on the phone and then told them about David from the cross country team calling and being upset, according to Adrienne. She told them about Adrienne's younger brothers, letting them being the mom and dad, know that they heard a vehicle's engine and a door closing sometime after midnight. One of them saw the vehicle as it drove away and was able to say it was a pickup truck. With this, police now had a type of vehicle, nothing more than that. And it wasn't even the right type of vehicle.
It usually isn't, especially in cases like this.
Yeah. They were determined to figure out who that truck belonged to and who was driving it. They started with David. They went to the school and talked to the cross-country coach and inquired about who David was. And they gave them the name David Graham. The coach acted quite surprised that Adrienne would have been called by David, since he had never actually witnessed them speak unless it was like on a need-to basis.
Yeah.
Like, even at practice, they just didn't talk.
Yeah, it's like, I'm sure we all have coworkers like that. I have one coworker like that. He talks to, like, nobody unless he's spoken to. And I had no idea this guy was in the paranormal shit until I talked to him. Once I talked to him, I heard about that, I asked him about that. Holy shit, did the floodgates open up on that? And if you looked at the guy, you wouldn't suspect him to be in a paranormal. He's like 6'2", 6'3", you know, big muscular Samoan guy, and it just was like, you're in the paranormal shit. He's like, fuck yeah, I am. I was like, I would have never put that with two of those, you with that.
Huh. So they started looking into David and found that he was just a typical teenage boy. When he was 7, his dad had taken him to an air show, and that really sparked something in him. So he kind of set out to achieve his dream, which was to become somebody in the Air Force. He wanted to be an Air Force pilot.
Okay.
He was popular. He liked to party and just have a good time. He had a girlfriend named Diane Zamora. Diane was very much like Adrian. She was very pretty, did well in school. She shared wanting to be involved in the military somehow, like her boyfriend David. And she was actively trying to achieve her dream, which was to be in the Navy. David was interviewed a couple times by the police. He admitted that he knew Adrian, but only through the cross-country team, and insisted they had no relationship other than just being acquaintances. They asked him if he called Adrian, and he said that he was home studying with his girlfriend Diane, and he never made a phone call to her. Adrian's closest friends were interviewed as well, and they were asked if she had ever talked about David, and her best friend. Usually your best friend knows everything about you. You tell right. them, like, your, not your inner workings, but, you tell them everything.
Right. Other than your internal workings, apparently.
Correct.
Unless it's like you and your best friend, you guys share everything. X-rays and all.
Word. That's true. Anyways, her best friend knew nothing about David. So Adrian had never spoken about him or just she knew nothing. Police were given access to Adrian's phone book and they looked through her contacts and saw that David's name and number didn't exist in her phone book. This made the police suspect that David didn't actually have anything to do with Adrian's murder. So he was able to continue on. They never asked for polygraph or anything like that. They kind of just crossed him off the list of potential suspects. Her boyfriend, Tracy Smith, was also looked into, but had a very solid alibi. So he was not a suspect at all. His alibi held up because he was in another state on a family vacation at this time. So he's got his entire family and pretty much anybody in that area of where they were staying that could be like, yeah, he was right here. When Tracy came back from his vacation, he also willingly took a polygraph test and passed it with flying colors. When he was interviewed, Tracy gave them some information on who they could look into. He stated that the night that he had talked to Adrian on the phone, that someone by the name of Brian had called in. So Adrian had said it was a David that called in, but apparently she told Tracy, her boyfriend, that it was a Brian. This led police to now have to figure out who the fuck Brian was.
It was Brian David.
And they did. They found Brian McMillian. He was just a local kid. While investigating Brian, the cops did find something quite interesting. Apparently he worked inside of a pharmacy that was near the restaurant that Adrian had worked at. And they came to realize that Brian had grown quite fond of Adrian.
I didn't figure that word was going as soon as you said his name for some reason.
Almost to the point of obsession. So he would show up at the restaurant often just to look at her. No conversation. He would just stare at her.
Yeah.
This freaked her out and she made it known to her coworkers that she didn't like it. So they were on high alert. If they saw him coming in, they would let her know and she would run off to the back and hide until he was gone. The police wound up interviewing Brian about Adrian's murder. In the beginning, he completely denied even knowing who she was, but then later on confessed that he knew who she was, which why lie about it when you've got people that can corroborate the fact that
right.
you show up just to stare at her?
Yeah. And it's like, also, there's a murder investigation going on about this same girl. Why are you going to fucking lie?
Right.
But then again, not saying he's the actual killer or whatever, but, you know, he's probably freaking the fuck out. Oh, my God, what are the cops wanting to do with me or whatever?
Right. So he was asked if he had spoken to Adrian the night that she was murdered, and he said, couldn't remember.
Yeah, okay.
In Brian's interview, he stated the night she died that he had been home drinking because he was lonely and depressed. He was asked if he was at Adrian's house the night she died. He said, I might have.
Dude, you're looking like super fucking sus with everything you say at this point.
Brian's dad absolutely refused to have his son take a polygraph test.
Okay, so if you are the dad and you're like, for sure, no, he didn't fucking do something, wouldn't you voluntarily say yes or whatever?
You would think so. So about a week later, Brian's house was stormed with numerous armed officers.
Yeah, because if he would have just done the polygraph test, that could have been avoided. But anyway,
they had reason to believe that Brian may have a weapon, so they went in full force. He was arrested on the spot and hauled off to the police station. His friends came around and started supporting Brian, saying that he was a misunderstood guy, but he was super gentle and he'd never hurt anyone. Brian's dad gave the alibi that his son was home the entire night on the night that Adrienne was murdered and that he never left the house. During this time, he was waiting on legal proceedings to take place. He had missed Christmas with his family, New Year's with his family. While he was held, the district attorney made him take a polygraph test, and he passed. With this, they were back to square one. They had nothing connecting Brian to Adrienne or her murder, other than his, I might have, when asked if he had been to her house that night. And he was immediately released from custody.
Well, his might have probably could be that his freaking out thinking, oh, like, I was, you know, with his history of, I guess, lack of a better term right now, of stalking her, I guess you could say, is that he probably was stalking outside of her window, is my assumption, possibly. And the look on Sarah's face is telling me I'm jumping ahead. I'm jumping the gun once again. So I'll just shut up and stop right there and let her continue.
9 months into the investigation, the trail seemed to have gone cold. That is, until something came from the Naval Academy in Annapolis, Maryland.
Okay.
See, Diane Zamora was a talker. She had told numerous of her fellow cadets her side of things that had happened back in her hometown of Mansfield, Texas. She told them that her and her boyfriend, David Graham, had killed a girl.
Oh, my God.
She gave Adrienne's name and everything when she was being a chatty Cathy. Police officers from Mansfield went all the way to Annapolis to interview Diane. During the interview,
Hold on. So did somebody, one of these cadets, tip off fucking police at this point? Is that what happened?
They told their naval officers.
Their commanding officer? Okay.
Yeah.
Like, as they fucking should. Because his dumbass be like, hey, I'm going to brag about murder because I'm now, quote unquote, almost government employee, which I'm thinking they're still considered in service at that point, but still fucking stupid.
During the interview, Diane denied having said anything at all. But yet there were multiple people that could basically verbatim say the exact same story to the police officers. Right,
because they are trying to report things as they are seen and told or heard.
Correct.
Fucking idiot.
So the Naval Academy wound up suspending her until the investigation was complete. Police officers from Mansfield then went all the way to Colorado Springs, Colorado, to pay David a visit at the Air Force Academy. When they told David what his girlfriend had been saying, he said he didn't know why why she would say that because it wasn't true. The more these officers talked to David, the more his composure left. He was cracking, and then he finally fully cracked and asked for a piece of paper so he could write a statement. His statement wound up being a 4-page long confession.
Where she's going to read the whole thing word for word here. No, I'm just kidding.
No, but it detailed exactly what he and Diane had done to Adrienne. He stated that he had offered to drive her home from school one day, and they fucked in an empty elementary school parking lot. He said he felt really bad about it happening because he really loved his girlfriend, Diane. Really loved her.
So murder was your only option?
He knew what he did with Adrienne was going to cause Diane a lot of grief and heartache. And then there was another day that he was with Diane and they were studying for the SATs. He broke down and told her everything he had done with Adrienne. After his confession of betrayal, Diane was pissed. Fucking duh.
Well, no shit.
She yelled at him that she wished he was dead. She told him the only way to make it right is to do what she asked him to do. She told him they were going to kill Adrienne. Together, they plotted out how they were going to make it happen. David was going to get a hold of Adrienne and ask her to sneak out. he was going to ask her to keep their meeting a secret. So he didn't want anybody, he didn't want her to tell anybody. He was going to take her somewhere desolate and break her neck before dumping her body in the river. At 2:30 a.m., David picked up Adrienne in his car. Adrienne had no idea what was planned. She also had no idea that Diane was in the hatchback, laying down, just waiting for her moment. You okay?
Yeah, I'm just annoyed by this.
Oh,
because it's just like, I know they're fucking kids, but holy shit, you're going to go to this extreme for this?
Yep. David pulled off on a road and turned off the car. Adrienne adjusted her seat because she thought they were about to get busy again.
Mm-hmm.
However, somehow something David said or did or a sound he made was cue for Diane to crawl out of the back of the car and to go to the front of the car where she'd be seen. She wound up walking to Adrienne's window and confronted her about being with her boyfriend and then hit her in the head with one of David's weights that he kept in the car for the gym. While this did injure Adrienne quite a bit, this is not what killed her. She was lucid enough to escape out the car window. This made David and Diane panic, so he grabbed his gun and ran after her. Because of her head wound, Adrienne didn't make it really far. She got to the edge of that farm and passed out. David finally caught up to her, and she was laying there motionless. So, you know, for good measure, he shot her. Once in the cheek, once in the forehead. Knowing that she was definitely dead at this point, Diane and David met back up and started to leave, and I guess he turned on the car, and they didn't speak right off the bat. But when they did, the fuck do you think they said?
I have no idea.
I love you.
Oh my God.
Yep.
Oh my God. Fucking teenagers.
Yep. Once David finished his confession, the Mansfield police returned to Annapolis to interview Diane again. This time, Diane had a statement of her own.
For a teenage audience, one, who was allowing you to fucking listen to this? Two, I understand that, you know, it's on a free, you know, free spots on the internet. And three, if you are considering doing something stupid like this, don't fucking do it. The heartache will go away.
Right.
Don't murder somebody over some stupid shit like that.
No.
But anyway.
So both of them were arrested. Both of them charged with capital murder. Though later, both of them would take back their confessions, even though they had it in writing.
Yeah, you can't take back something you wrote out, you fucking idiots.
David would say that Diane did it all. She was the mastermind, which she was the mastermind, but she's not the one that shot the gun twice.
Right.
Diane would say that David did all of it, but it wasn't his idea, and he's not the one that mollywopped her in the face with a fucking weight. In 1998, Adrienne's mom, Linda, asked the courts to remove the possibility of death for both David and Diane. Mom's got a lot more guts and niceness to her than I would.
Right.
Their trial began in February of 1998. Numerous witnesses stated that Diane showed no remorse for helping with the murder of Adrienne. She was charged with capital murder on February 17th, which is an automatic sentence of life in prison with the eligibility of parole in 30 years. David Graham was also found guilty of capital murder and was sentenced to life in prison with the eligibility of parole in 40 years. They are both still incarcerated and will be eligible for parole when they are 60. So another 20 years?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think so.
These two were given the nickname the Cadet Killers. A waste of space human beings.
Yep. Yeah, threw away great careers you guys had because of some stupid shit like this. But like when you said like Adrienne's mom had a lot more guts than you did.
Mm-hmm.
All I can envision is you and your sister fighting over flipping the switch, pushing the button or whatever in the death chamber, but like, let me fucking do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I can see is you two fighting over the button to do it.
Yep.
One, the other one is because they can, because of how dark their personality is. Yeah. Is if it wasn't their own child, it's like, I want to do that. And let me push it. Let me do it.
Was their own child, oh, right. They'd be the first in line to flip the switch.
I know, but I'm just saying just how the dark of their personality is in general. Yeah. They'd just be like, I want to do it just so I can say I did it. But, you know, if it was like either your nieces or nephew, you know, was the victim here, that like she'll do it with a fucking smile on her face, making eye contact with the killer.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it.
I'm sure you would be too.
Oh, yeah.
And then follow me crying almost because you guys got your justice that way.
Yeah. But it's just over something so fucking stupid.
Right.
So stupid. And he wasn't even in the wrong. Or, sorry, she, Adrienne, was not in the wrong.
Right.
There's no way to know if she knew about Diane.
Yep.
At all.
Exactly.
David knew about Diane.
Right.
David's the one that fucked up.
Right.
Don't be like that, David.
Right. Be like this one.
He's a good guy.
Dark and spooky for somehow gets possessed by a fucking roller rink DJ 3 days a week. On Twitch with the playlist that, you know, we give.
Yeah. Some of that music you play is fucking awful, dude.
Everybody else seems to like it.
It's because everybody else has awful taste in music, apparently.
Okay. Miss, I'm going to skip a song 3 seconds into it, not knowing if I'll like hearing this new band or not, unless I play it in its entirety.
To be fair, when we're in your truck, that's all we get to hear is the shit you like.
Because it's my truck.
I don't really have that option in my car.
You got your XM satellite radio in your car?
Yeah.
But anyhow, I mean, you get to in a couple days for 2.5 hours and 2.5 hours back.
Looking forward to that.
So, yeah, like I was saying, if you're one of the teenage listeners, one, who's allowing you to allowing you to listen to us?
Yeah.
Shame on them.
Tell your mom it's bedtime and it's like.
Right.
Yeah, you know, we're the bad people and we scare right. you and stuff.
And two, if you are even considering doing some dumb shit like this, don't fucking do it because we don't want to talk about you.
Yeah.
And if you do this and do listen to us, we're going to talk even worse about you than these people because we warned you not to do it.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, with enough rambling going on, I think it's time we get out of here for the day, Sarah. What do you think?
I agree.
So until next time.
Remember to creep it real.
All right. Bye.
Bye. Join our Facebook group by searching Macabre Emporium. Like and subscribe on YouTube at Macabre Emporium Podcast. Follow us on TikTok at Macabre Emporium Pod. Follow us on Twitter at Macabre Emporium. If you have any stories of the paranormal, your local true crime, or weird history that you would like us to look into and possibly do an episode on, email us at macabreemporiumpod@gmail.com. And remember to follow, rate, review, and share whenever and wherever you can to help us grow our podcast.